Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson are politically incorrect. Today's News Talk, TNT. TNT Radio.
Well, he certainly got that right, didn't he, Richard? It's great to be back again after the news. Now, we've got some very special guests. I'm going to ask my dear friend Richard, whose mother never called him Dick, to introduce them to you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Today, we're going to sort of probably traverse a little bit of what's happened in the last week, and we've got James Allen, Canadian-Australian law professor, I think the current Garrick Professor of Law at the University of Queensland.
His reputation precedes him.
Well, well and truly, so it should. He also has degrees from Queen's University, London School of Economics, and the University of Hong Kong. As I barely got through senior, I have to defer to a man with much higher intellect than I. And our other co-guest is Graham Haycroft, who I think we can call a disruptor. A definite disruptor of the cosy world of the union movement, as he's the executive director of the Nurses Professional Association, and he's also about to start his own journalist association, the Australian Journalists Association. So we've got two men, slightly diverse in what they do, but highly intellectual, and I might just quickly, I have read some of James's articles in the Spectator magazine, very good reading, and I just wanted to touch, if I could quickly first...
Not to be missed, Richard. No, there's also another point that we ought to raise before you finish your introduction.
Go on.
And that is that last Saturday here in Australia, there was an election on the federal level, that is, an election to elect the party to govern Australia, not each individual state.
Yes, well, that was where and, I was going. You're going to
and we had a change point. Of government.
Yep.
Well, we will have a change of government.
We've got a change.
It's as close as it can be to a change of government, isn't it? Well, but it didn't happen. It didn't happen on the basis of first past the post vote.
No, we don't do that.
But no, it happened because a lot of people wanted to vote against the major parties and did so. And that helped the Labor Party win the election. Correct me if I'm wrong. One of these channels will be able to explain.
Well, I think I wanted to touch on it with James because he had a large piece in the Spectator along the lines of the election result where the rich voted for the left. Now, that was it's the most interesting dynamic. And James, you've obviously, you're a bit of a cephologist amongst other things, no doubt. What's your take on how that's unraveled and turned the whole world upside down?
Yeah, well, thank you, Richard and Mike, for having me and Graham on the show. I know we're both looking forward to it. You said in the intro that there's a change of government, but there's really not a change of governing philosophy. The Libs, which is the center-right party, were so left-wing that you could put a piece of paper between them and the new Labour government in terms of, it's been 9 years of Liberal government, coalition government, which is center-right in Australia. And since Tony Abbott was defenestrated back in 2015, I have a hard time thinking of a single right of center conservative thing the coalition has done. I can't think of one. So that's the first thing to say. Secondly, I'm quite happy with the result. I think they had to lose. They were so bad in their total lack of commitment. They were, for me, the handling of the pandemic was infuriating. I mean, the way the pandemic was handled with the heavy-handed despotism, the press was sort of part of a fear porn thing. We're now seeing a survival rate from COVID of 99.8%. And that's true close to whether you're vaccinated or not. It's a disease that kills old people and obese people. But the idea that we would weld people into their homes, almost literally, not quite, it was shocking. And the fact that we had a right of center government that just stood by, they made Boris Johnson look like a liberal. I mean, in the entire 2 years, Scott Morrison couldn't even summon up the will to criticize Dan Andrews once. Mm. So I'm glad they lost. We had to send a message that sort of authoritarian despotism doesn't get rewarded by voters on the center right, and so I'm glad about that. I don't know how Graham feels, but I'm delighted we took out a lot of the touchy feely fake conservative MPs for the Liberal Party. I wish we could have taken out a few more.
You think there was a bit too much Hillsong amongst it?
That would have meant he had
some principles, Mike. He didn't have any principles. It wasn't Hillsong. It was a room full of 23-year-old advisors who didn't care about anything except the next day's focus group.
It's very refreshing to hear you say that, Jim, because you know as well as I do that these people rely so much on their policy advisors to tell them what to do and say, and they're straight out of the office of the party that they've been in, since they got out of nappies. It's extraordinary, really, isn't it? And that's how these guys run the country, believe it or not.
Just getting back to the original point, there's lots of evidence in the Anglosphere that the wealthier you are now, the more likely you are to vote left. I mean, I think Hillary got the 100 wealthiest counties in 2016, and Biden got almost all of them in 2020. And Boris, when he put together that winning coalition in 2019, he wasn't winning in upmarket, leafy parts of London or Edinburgh. You know, he's outer suburbs. It's the working class. It's people who hate woke. This is a powerful winning majority of the country. And these 23-year-olds who want to live in inner city seats, they're focusing their policies on trying to save Keong and Wentworth. It's a loser strategy. I'm glad those people have lost.
No complaint from me, Graham. We've had a few chats about a few things, et cetera, et cetera. On that very point that Jim's talking to, do we even try and bother to get the teal seats back, or leave them with the wokies and let them all swim around in their rubbish and work on others?
Oh, excuse me.
You're right.
Absolutely leave it with the teals.
Yeah.
The problem with the Liberal Party is that long ago forgot who it represents. Menzies defined, and I dug out today just before, his Forgotten People speech, and he said, the kind of people I represent, the salary earners, the shopkeepers, the skills artisans, the professional men and women farmers, and so on. He defined a group, and one can say, well, those groups aren't relevant today. That's not the point. If you're in politics, you can't win 100% of the vote. You need to get 50% plus one. And there is a core of constituencies out there, I believe. And, well, don't believe me. Donald Trump found them in America and Nigel Farage found them in England, where they have this common community of interest. You've got to define who they are and what is going to appeal to them. And I can tell you the seats where the teals are, As Jim said, in America, all the wealthy seats have all gone to Democrats. Same in England, same in France, someone was telling me. It's the way these people are, the elites. They're not affected. They're...
Graham, they might be affected eventually. Not yet, maybe later. If we go ahead and trash the country, and I'd just like to touch on what's happened to Sri Lanka in the last 12 months of going green, net zero, whatever they want to call it. The place is a basket case, and they've managed to do it in a very short order of time. But if we're going to run these agendas in this nation, we'll all be in strife. Everyone will. All I do know, I certainly know this being an old bushy, everyone in the woke seats won't have a hope in hell of feeding themselves. They won't know how.
Richard, I think part of the problem in Sri Lanka was not just what you said, but the president bought into the supranational sort of organization, told him that his farmers should go organic. And so they actually cut all the sort of incredibly sophisticated farming techniques that rely on expensive fertilizer because it's, created from oil and gas. And so they basically went from exporting lots of food to not even close to self-sufficient in food. If the world went completely organic, we wouldn't be able to feed 3 billion people. Forget about 8 billion. I mean, this is insane. These people are insane, these organic sort of teal type mindsets. They don't look at cost-benefit analysis. They virtue signal because they're rich.
Yeah, but they will also be equally as damaged were all that to be promulgated right across the country or the world. They won't be left alone, and most of them couldn't defend themselves. They're not hard, I'm going to call it hard-nosed people. A lot of them are pretty soft. They'll get a rude shock.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's where we're at, and we just had the election to achieve it. It's an ongoing battle. We were just talking with Elizabeth Hart, who's a very committed person on the COVID trail, and she's saying, how do you break through in this society today to start to make people aware that they're being conned? Has anyone thought about that?
Well, I don't know what you mean by conned. If you mean that the cost of lockdowns is going to be 5 or 10 times higher, even in lives, than the 2019 British plan that was the WHO plan that was based on 100 years of data, don't lock down. Tell people that we have a problem. Leave them to make smart choices. This is the Swedish model, the Florida model.
Right.
And when you look at excess deaths coming out of Sweden, by far, it's now patently clear that they made the right calls. I think that Anders Tegnell, their chief epidemiologist, should get a Nobel Prize. He won't. But, you know, this idea that somehow Australia handled the pandemic well, it's just bonkers. At best, they saved, you know, I think the latest study out of Johns Hopkins says 2.3% to 3% tops. And that's only looking at COVID deaths, not at the deaths that flow from lockdowns through alcoholism, suicides, missed cancer checks. They're going to dwarf the number of ones we've saved. So the way we handled the lockdown was disgraceful. It threw the freedom concerns out the window. And I think every right of center government that was complicit in the heavy-handedness needs to be voted out. No exceptions, vote them out.
Yeah, well, we're certainly on the right channel there. We've just managed to do that last week, and it will continue to keep happening, I think. Is he going away?
No, I'll tell you what he's doing. For those who can't see that we can, there's a bit of background noise behind James. But this is really interesting, Graham. You've got to agree, haven't you, that there's a lot more fallout from these mandates that have occurred, you know, including all the lockdowns in various states of Australia, let alone those parts of the world, which have got a tremendous backwash of, as James has said, serious health problems, deaths caused by lots of other things other than either being jabbed or getting COVID, as a result of what governments have done in the name of trying to help people theoretically. They've just shut their businesses down. I mean, the suicide rate will not be known for some time yet, I suspect. Don't you think, James?
Yeah.
Well, I agree with all that. And there was an interesting study out that showed deaths from COVID in Europe and North America, and then all the big islands. So Australia, New Zealand, but Iceland, Taiwan, Japan, and some of those other islands did not lock down. And their death rate was indistinguishable from ours. So the idea that, you know, Morrison and some of the state premiers are pushing that, well, we would have had European death rates if we hadn't sort of welded people into their homes and arrested pregnant women and beat up people, that's just the nonsense. There's no, you know, when you look at the actual meta studies, Australia is not some super, they didn't achieve some super great thing. All we did was outspend Justin Trudeau, which our kids and grandkids will be paying back, you know, for the next 50 years.
Yeah. Mind you, you've got to remember that Australia is an island too.
That's what I mean.
They've got a great advantage over.
That's what I mean. Yeah. Every island did well. And their deaths from COVID were a small fraction of non-island states. And so the obvious correlation is with being an island. There's no island that did badly through COVID.
No. I think one of the points that I'd like to bring in was this lockdown stuff. Because we had a whole bunch of nurses, and when the mandates hit, I was interested to see who was going to be affected. And I went along to a particular rally that was organised down the Gold Coast. And there were about 300-400 people there, and I was curious to know who was going to turn up. And when I got there, I was quite surprised. I can read a room. This was 300 or 400 conservative family people. These were not NIMBY anti-vaxxers. They were what I would call core conservative types. And I think what happened, the Labor Party initially stated that, you know, mandating workers get vaccinations would be a step and a half too far for workers. And then they saw they obviously did some very good survey work.
Oh, right.
And they discovered that the groups that were most affected were those that don't normally vote for Labor. You have your faith-based people, you know, special rules for churches and weddings and funerals, but not for football matches. The people that really objected to the mandate were people with respected free speech, did not like the government interposing themselves on their lives. They would normally be conservative people. Small business people tend not to, largely don't support Labor. So the lockdowns had a huge political effect on the non-Labor voting constituencies. And the Labor Party knew it, and the LNP people didn't understand it. And they remained silent. They said, oh, we've seen the surveys. Everyone thinks Anastasia Palaszczuk is doing a good job, so therefore we won't say anything about it. But they just then remained silent for two years. They're still silent.
Can we come back to that, Graham? Because we need to take a short break. We'll come back to that point. We'll get James's opinion about it too.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
It's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
The United States government has declared you an enemy of the state. For the first time in history, a foreign journalist has been charged under the U.S. Espionage Act for publishing truthful information about war crimes. If convicted, our right to free press is over. We have been led to despise the journalist charged by a massive smear campaign directed at both the left and the right, yet his record speaks for itself.
He's the only journalist to have never gotten it wrong.
The charges are opposed by all major human rights and free press organizations, but our once trusted news outlets have failed to inform us. It is not too late. We can demand the UK stop the extradition of journalist and publisher Julian Assange. We can demand the Department of Justice drop the charges. Call UK Home Secretary Priti Patel at 020-7219-3528 or call the Department of Justice at 202-514-2000. They are not after him. They're after us.
You took the first step and quit smoking, but even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
We're the voice of freedom, TNT Radio.
And here we are back on Politically Incorrect with Mike Tennessee and Richard Carson and our special guest, Graham Haycroft, and James Allen, Professor James Allen from the University of Queensland. James, you have written prolifically over the years on all sorts of topics, and it's just terrific to have you on the program this afternoon. And let's go back to that point we were discussing that Graham raised before. Richard, you're the questioner now.
Well, righto. Thanks, Mike. The question being posed by Graham is that the poor old LNP were asleep at the wheel, didn't understand what was being done to them by those naughty Labor chaps, and right around that they had rings run around them coming into the election. But it goes back, never mind that side of it, it really comes down to the lack of understanding of the whole process that we've been watching for over 2 years now. They just haven't got, and I don't think either party has much of a clue about the coronavirus, the COVID, the vaccinations, the vaccine mandates and all that. It's been a complete and utter bloody disaster from day one. Everything's wrong. But now to try to redress it, the question is, how do they all get out from under the mess they've made? Because I don't think they've got a hope in hell of doing it without half of them ending up in jail. There's a problem. I don't know.
I don't think any of them are going to end up in jail, to be totally honest.
What a shame.
Richard, you might like that to happen, but I'm not sure that it wasn't just largely cowardice. I mean, I think if you take the example of Britain, I think Boris Johnson's instincts are pro-freedom, pro-liberty, but when confronted with a sort of monolithic public health clerisy and a set of journalists who really just descended into fear porn, you know, they're running daily counts of the cases, and there was very little sort of skeptical questioning. You had the editor of Lancet magazine sort of basically censoring people who were pointing out that there's a lot of evidence for the Wuhan lab leak theory, which there is, and now it's the prevailing theory, right? And so in the face of that, even I think Boris Johnson would have made himself his legacy if he just stood up against this sort of fear porn press and the public health cast. But even inside his own party, there was huge pressure to go down the lockdown route. And, you know, and that's Boris Johnson. When you move to Australia, certainly Morrison, and I don't think anyone in the sort of upper echelons of the Liberal Party had any sort of pro-freedom instinct. So if Boris Johnson is going to get overwhelmed, and you have to remember in Britain, they had a number of votes on the sort of heavy-handed, despotic rules and laws. And within the Tory party, you were getting up to 100 MPs voting against their own party. And that put a lot of pressure on Boris. And ultimately, it's why in the summer of 2021, Britain opened up, one of the first countries to open up, leave aside Sweden. Well, in the sort of right of center political party in Australia, no MPs stood up against, no Liberal MPs except for Christensen and one other guy,
Gerard Rennick, Craig Kelly left Craig the party Kelly. Over it.
Yeah,
and Canavan too.
He never voted against, you know, you'd get a few people commenting, but you didn't have someone like Brady, the head of the 1922 committee, coming out and publicly blasting his own party for their despotism. So there's something wrong with the way we're picking MPs on the right side of politics in Australia. You get these people like Tim Wilson and James Patterson coming out of the IPA. They look great. They talk the talk. And then as soon as they're elected to parliament, I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear them say anything about freedom issues through the whole pandemic. I'm glad Tim Wilson lost. I'm going to be blunt. I sort of liked the guy before that, but he has been a disgrace on freedom issues since he's been elected. And James Patterson's barely been any better. He's in the Senate, so he's sort of cocooned. So I think it's partly a problem of incentives for people in power, and the incentives aren't lining up. So that, you know, we've got too many people who didn't have a good job and spend, you know, till they're 45 doing some other job. And then they get elected to parliament and they don't care. They don't care if they're reelected. They're going to do the right thing. We don't have any of those people much anymore.
And then they become politicians, not parliamentarians. There's a difference.
Yes.
Oh, Jim was making the point that there's almost no one in the party, in the parliament, who can say, well, get stuff to, I've got better things to do. We've got the curious situation, actually, Amanda Stoker's now gone, but the five LNP senators in Queensland are actually unique. Each one of them would make more money out of the parliament than in the parliament. But I've run out of names, I'm sorry. There's no one else in the country, I think, who would make more money out of parliament than in parliament.
Angus Taylor would. Angus Taylor was very, very highly paid guy. So he's not doing it for the money, but you're right. There you have to think long and hard to get very many people other than had successful careers.
That's right. And of course they don't care. And I think it comes back to the core problem of pre-selections. I mean, how does someone like Jim Molan can only get the third spot on the Senate ticket in New South Wales? The unwinnable spot. And then when there's a casual vacancy.
By the way, did he lose? Is he out now? Do we know for sure?
No, he was then given the casual vacancy. So he was in. But a condition of the casual vacancy was he wouldn't renominate and wouldn't run again. Because that's it. The New South Wales Liberal Party is corrupt. And there's no way around that. I mean, how do you end up with that situation where you've got the the Prime Minister basically sorting out the pre-selections at the last minute. The problem with the Liberal Party is that they don't know who their constituents are. That's the first thing I've got to do. They've got to do what Menzies do. Go back and say, well, who should we be representing? It's pretty easy. Gosh, strike me lucky. I mean, we've set up these alternate unions and we've developed a mechanism of talking to and identifying these groups. I tell you what, the blue-collar people, the people who work for small business, they would always regard, their employees, their labour territory. No, they're not. These people have to meet a budget and they are quite different from the people who work for large, big public companies. There's quite a number of those people who work for large companies. Donald Trump worked this out in America, so did Farage. These constituencies are sitting, staring in the face of the Liberal Party in Australia, and they've all got common communities of interest. I mean, how hard, this is what they've got to do. They've got to, first of all, identify these constituencies, and then they've got to find people in those seats who understand those constituencies, understand what appeals to them. Every single one of them has to balance a budget. So how hard is it for your first government priority be to balance a budget? Not because it's good for the country, because it sets an example for the people who you want to vote for you. Hey, we want you to vote for us. Notice, look, we're balancing the budget. I mean, this is just kindergarten stuff. So, but like Jim, I was very, very pleased to see the Liberals lose. I put them last. I'm a member of the LNP. I put them last because we've got to get rid of these idiots, or certainly change their thinking and get them to focus on the constituencies that will win.
Graham, anyway, just on that point, by all means putting them last and having a bit of a sweep out of, I'll call them the teal Liberals, but that you've still got the problem of the people who are then selecting those that are going to take their places for the next time around. And if they're going to just serve up the same type of calibre of candidate, you're not going to go anywhere. There has to be a complete change of candidature as well.
Exactly.
And along with your identification of what the hell they should be talking to and talking about.
Well, Richard, you forget that Tony Abbott, when he was still Prime Minister before they knifed him, he pushed through or helped to lead to changes in the New South Wales branch where the local members were supposed to have a say.
Right,
and
yep.
It's pretty clear that Morrison and Hawke gamed this. I mean, there was about a year and a half where Hawke just refused to come to meetings, and so they couldn't go ahead with pre-selections. And so this was clearly so that at the last minute, there could be some captain's picks, all of whom had lost. And, you know, it's obvious that they were afraid that the local members were going to deselect Zimmerman, maybe Hawke. You know, this is what they were afraid of. So to protect those people who went on to lose anyway, they refused to let the local members have the vote on who their member's going to be. Now, you can say a lot of bad things about Queensland, but at least the LNP in Queensland, the local members are picking who's going to run. And in New South Wales, it just seems to be a factional set of warlords who...
Well, the bloke who's in charge of it, he's heavily involved in the big pharma structure, I think. Photius.
Who's that?
Photius, the head of the Liberal
Party. Well, he does seem... I don't understand how this man has the sway he does, but it does seem that...
It'd be money. Money would help him hang on to his spot, and then he would be orchestrating acolytes to come in. That is probably part of, Graham, you were talking to me the other day about a targi. That seems to be a mob that comes up fairly regularly. Are they involved with the coronavirus committees and things like that, or what's the go there?
Hang on, a targi?
I don't know who they were. You were talking to me about some group that aren't elected in the background. No, I've got it wrong.
No, it must have confused me with somebody
else. Sorry, that wouldn't be unusual for me.
Sorry.
No, with a beard like that, Graham, I'm not sure how that even could confuse anybody.
What was that?
I said, not with Graham's beard. Listen, I'm going to just go, let me go back to what Graham said. I think I'm not 100% with Graham in this sense. I think what you need in your elected MPs is bravery. And what we have with right of center people being put up for election is not bravery. I mean, you know, going in, and this is going to happen to Dutton, he's going to be selected as leader. The ABC is going to do hit job after hit job on him. The most of the mainstream media is going to attack him. So you need someone who's brave. Now, Donald Trump had faults, but he was brave, yeah, and he didn't back down. And we're getting to a stage now where that's almost the most important criterion, to have someone who, you know you're going to be attacked relentlessly. What kind of a right of center party a month before the election gives the ABC, the public broadcaster, an extra, $100 million, $80 million?
Yeah, about $100 million. Yep.
Yeah, why would you do that when you know they're going to attack? It's like, do you think you're buying them off with this? They were just as relentless anyway.
So absolute stupidity.
It's stupidity, and they won't, in no bravery, they won't even explore privatizing the ABC. So we, half the population is funding a broadcaster who hates you. I don't want to spend tax, I don't want my tax money to go to the ABC. But it
James,
does.
I'm with you. Yeah. I know somebody extremely well who worked for the ABC once. The ABC has never been the same since he left in 1976.
Oh,
I know who that is.
Yeah, you do.
You do,
Richard. But James, to take up your point about the ABC, and we've skittled them a fair bit on this show, not because I know the person well who used to work for them back in 1976 or before, up until 1976 when it was good. The thing is that it should be privatised. You know, the government money does do nothing for the ABC, and the ABC does nothing for us as taxpayers. And I suspect it's the same the world over, where government, where taxpayers' funds are going into a corporation, which theoretically is an apolitical body. Well, you know, the ABC has failed completely.
Well, I agree with that, Michael, though I think we need to give some of your British listeners some context. A British journalist came out here and he said the ABC makes the BBC look like Fox News. And I agree with that. I mean, at least there's the odd conservative who goes on, the odd presenter. Our ABC, there's not a single identifiable right of center presenter, producer, nothing. On all the main, well, basically all the television shows related to politics, there's just wall-to-wall left. It moves from Labour to the Greens. And when this is pointed out, you get this sort of, well, you know, we're professionals and we can be disinterested. What? It's just garbage. And I do not understand why any right of center party, at the very least, you could force them to take television ads, which is what happens in Canada with the CBC. And so you cut back their funding. And to the extent they need ads, they have to bend a little. You could think about a streaming service. There's been lots of people write books. It's not that they don't try one of these things. They don't try any of them. They just keep giving them more money. And frankly, it's pathetic.
James, for the benefit of anybody who doesn't understand the Australian Broadcasting Corporation mentality, we've got a person who used to be an editor of a magazine as the chairperson, and I say that, with respect, I suppose, of the board of the ABC, it seems to me that she has absolutely no say in the governance of the corporation, which is publicly funded.
They have no say because they don't try to have a say. Maybe let Graham have a word here, but I hear that the board comes in and they can't do anything. Well, you make a big enough stink, you can just start, they must have control over the remuneration committee to some extent.
They're a bit like elected parliamentarians becoming politicians. People who are elected to the board of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation become just members of a board and do nothing about doing what they're supposed to be doing.
But can I just cut in here? Because James made a very, very important point about the bravery of politicians. I'll come back to that in a sec. But the real issue with the ABC, well, there's a number of issues with the ABC, but we're just talking about why can't the board do anything? There's no one on the, if you like, the conservative side of politics in this country has any understanding of how institutions work. The left know it intimately. And the board can't do anything because over time they've made changes to policy and the structure. And effectively, you can't do anything. I mean, ultimately, you're not going to get a conservative politician with the sufficient courage to even mention it. I mean, the only thing we can do is, frankly, give it to them, give it to the staff, not the property, not the real estate, just give it to them and say, it's yours. We're not going to just give you $2 million a year, to fund it. You've just got this huge asset. Do with it what you will. You'll have to make it pay because we're not going to give you any money.
Graham, that would last about 5 weeks.
No, well, it doesn't matter. What fun it would be to watch. I'd even offer my services to show them how they could probably make it run for a while.
No, don't be silly.
Can I just get back to James' crucial point about the quality and the courage of the LNP politicians? And a better example of this was this home loan, new homeowners' home loan arrangement coming from the industry super funds. Right? Remember that? It came out in the last week.
Correct.
Why was it done in the last week? Let me tell you why. Because we know we've set up these alternate unions. And we've said to the LNP politicians who are an indirect beneficiary of what we do, because every person that joins our union is $200 per person per year, that doesn't bet against them. So you'd think they'd be crawling over broken glass to come and support what we do. Oh, no. They are terrified, and this is what they're terrified of. They're terrified of 300 or 400 union-paid workers arriving in their electorate a month before the election and cold canvassing everyone in it. That's why it was held back to the policy of ScoMo's was held back the week before, because it's too late to do that. And that was the case. The cabinet just simply balked. And I'm totally unsurprised by this. And the thing that's even worse is that the people who booked would be totally unashamed of that. It would be just realistic politics. We can't do that.
You've got to go and do that problem. Thing.
That's our problem.
Graham, just before we come back, we have a quick break. I think we've got to go off to the news or something. If we can find out.
For a quick break.
Yeah, wherever he's gone.
Election 2022, with his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
The Australian federal election result will be very disappointing for freedom fighters who hoped for a much larger vote among the candidates who stood against oppressive government policies in the name of combating COVID-19. But collectively, these candidates received around 12% of the vote nationwide. While this is a minority vote, it's a significant minority which the new Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, will ignore at his peril, and the nation's peril too. Nationwide, the Greens and the Legalised Cannabis Australia Party received the biggest positive swings, which says a lot about the state of education and thinking in the nation. This insanity has also led to the election of several so-called teal independents, who will aid Prime Minister Albanese to trash the economy to fight a non-existent climate crisis. Informed Australians must not lose hope, but the fight for freedom won't be easy. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
A man's home is his castle, but his men's shed, that's his kingdom. There are now more than 1,000 men's sheds across Australia, and they're more than just a shed. You can make things, grow things, find a mate, be a mate, shoulder to shoulder. The Australian Men's Shed Association can help to find a shed near you. Yeah, there's something for
you at the Men's Shed. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, there'd actually be a few people who have been ousted from Parliament who probably will need a Men's Shed. James, were you surprised by the result of the election today?
Well, I called for it. I wanted them to lose because I personally wanted it to happen back in 2016 when Turnbull, right after Turnbull knifed Abbott. But in 2019, I think people were prepared to give Morrison the benefit of the doubt. We were all glad that Turnbull went. And it turned out that Morrison basically ran a Turnbull-esque government. He was okay on defense. AUKUS was okay, but when you actually look at the detail, it was more talk than walk. He stood up to China a little, but outside of those areas, he just basically ran a Labour government, afraid to do anything. And so they needed to lose. Now, did I think all of the sort of five key inner city MPs and cabinet who were pushing net zero and who were pushing to give money to the ABC, did I think they'd all lose? No, I'm glad they did. I'm talking about Zimmerman, Falinski, yeah. Wilson, Frydenberg, I'm missing one. There's one other one. But I'm glad they all got knocked out. Unlike you guys, you know, I think things are going to be bad in the next 3 years. We're looking at what you might call a cost of lockdown crisis coming, and there's going to be stagflation. And if Dutton has some cojones, it could be really, we could see a big Liberal win in 2025. If he becomes just another enervated Labour light type of opposition, they're going to lose. But if he comes with some policies, and in that sort of scenario, it's possible the Libs will win all those seats back. But what we can't have is them shaping their policy to try to hold on to Keong. We don't care, you know, if they win them, fine. If they lose them, fine. But we have had 3 years where every policy seems to be seen through the lens of, will this help Josh Frydenberg win his seat? That is ridiculous. You know, the people we care about are not living in Josh Frydenberg's constituency.
I've got a question for both of you. Do you think that the politicians, particularly those who have lost their seats when probably people didn't expect them to, do you think that a lot of the problem comes from the sort of late-minute advertising by the parties, which is so negative? I mean, on both sides of the fence. I mean, Richard will tell you there was a reason for me leaving the country because I can't stand the 3 weeks before an election having to listen to advertisements on television and radio. And they just are mostly negative rather than telling people, this is why you should vote for us, not why you shouldn't vote for another. What's the mentality with this sort of politics that goes on at the last minute before an election?
Habit, I think, just habit. Keep in mind, the last two elections have been totally dominated by Palmer. You know, everyone sort of forgets that there's $100 million worth of expenditure in both. There's 80 the last one, $100 million this time, all of which didn't have no effect at all. I'm not so sure. I think it certainly helped Cruel ScoMo's reputation. I mean, people weren't sure about him, and to read every day in the paper that Barnaby Joyce thought he was distrustful, I don't think that helped. But the rest, I have no idea what the Libs are. It's not going to be easy under Albanese. That's almost sort of like that bloody saying they used to be, David Campese. What was the thing used to say about him? It was a sort of a fine thing, you know. I thought that's not a, you know, it might be easy under Albanese. It sort of rhymes and.
Yeah. That's just typical advertising jargon. James, what do you think? Do you think that there's too much emphasis on late-minute advertising about the negatives rather than positives on the part of a party who should be winning based on policies?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, they bring in these so-called experts who are just very transactional and they're very focused on focus groups. A lot of people have already voted, of course, before the last 3 weeks. I'm not really a big fan of early voting. I think, you know, unless barring having an illness or something, you should have to go and vote on the same day. In France, everyone votes on the same day. There's no early voting. I quite like that. I feel it's part of your obligation. And so I'm not sure how much the ads affect people. they weren't even very clever. Sometimes you get some funny ads that might work, but these were just boring. If you've watched Outsiders the last couple of weeks, they were commenting on how pathetically weak the ads were. But it was hard for Morrison to run on policy because he didn't have any.
He couldn't run on the economy.
I'm not sure what policy he was going to run on. He had the exact same set of policies as Albanese. So what was he going to run on?
Gentlemen, just a quick one. I've got some numbers here that claim that the informal vote this time around was 15%. It's not normally anything like that. Has anyone heard anything?
It's a bit early to know. They're still counting.
Yeah.
I think it'll definitely be lower than the last time, maybe in the mid to high 80s instead of the... So if you've got a compulsory voting system and only 85% of people are voting, that's barely better than New Zealand that has voluntary voting, and they still get into the mid to high 80s. Well, so
this is a number coming out of the AEC at the moment, so whether it's right or wrong, I'll find out.
What about the marijuana party? Came out of nowhere, spent nothing, ran a couple of guys out of Noosa, apparently.
Did very well.
Someone told me they're going to be between 300,000 and 400,000 government funding because they got over the threshold.
Well, they'll be able to buy a couple of reefers with that, I think, Grant.
Well, I think they'll be a lifetime supply.
They'll be on their backs, buddy, drifting off into the never never with that.
But that's your point, though, Richard. The 15% informal is the vote for the Canada's party. Now, that's an informal vote. That's a fun vote. This is what I think of you guys. Tick one.
That's a vote that unless you really want to legalise whatever it is, you don't want to vote for a major party. Or the Greens.
Graham. Well, they outvoted Campbell Newman, who I think is a great guy. And God save us. Anyway.
The point that James made before about, courage in a politician. The few that I've had discussions with in the last 2 years, they all run for cover on any issue at all. They won't debate it, they won't discuss it. They'll send you a message back if you send in some information. Your view is very important to us, and that's the end of the information. So what you've really got is six or seven blokes, I don't know about the Labor Party, but in the Conservative Party, that's the dictum and that's all there is about it. So there is no open debate or discussion or fluid exchanges of ideas. Not happening.
Can I just add in here about on that point of bravery? I mean, at the state level, I said we've had no support at all for this concept that we've got. Jared Blake, to his enormous credit, immense credit, has started to come out and champion the view that workers themselves should be able to choose who the union should be. Pretty simple concept.
Yeah.
But he's had enormous pushback from all of his backbenchers who are terrified of poking the bear. That's the term they use, don't poke the bear. They all worry if you do, they'll end up with 300 or 400 people in their electorate canvassing beforehand and they will lose. And it's not worth that much, so just remain silent.
Well, that's bullshit. Listen.
That's what they do.
If you want to do something, you've got to stand up and articulate your point and argue it and get out there and do something about it. They've got another couple of years to go around and say, this is why this is a good idea. It will be to your benefit and therefore we're going to support it. But I think there's your first problem. They've got to have enough nous to understand something. Most of them haven't got any.
It's lack of cojones, mate. That's the problem. Yeah.
No, I get all that, right? I think Mr. Allen's got it in one there, cojones.
Yes.
Spanish. we used to call them prairie oysters out when I was on the farm, but it doesn't matter. Did you have those up in Canada, James, prairie oysters?
No, but what I think your listeners on the radio need to know is we can all see each other on the Zoom pictures, and I'm sitting here drinking wine, and I'm looking at three of the most abstemious people. I'm really sort of stunned that you've got people drinking water. And now, personally, I have trouble trusting people who don't drink. I don't want to sound judgmental.
I don't panic. I've got about 8,000 tons of wine in the house.
So I don't mind you. accusing me of being a teetotaler, James.
Okay, good. I just,
if it was
just
James,
get
if,
that sorted out.
James, if it was an Olympic sport, I would be in the Australian drinking team.
Don't be afraid of this rubbish. Coffee
Graham,
cup.
Graham, you've got no hope like of beating us. Physique. You have the physique to actually take that title, I have to say.
you're looking about what's yonder casket, lean and hungry look. Graham and I have shared a drink occasionally, and I know neither of us qualify as sprinters. I think we've been in the front row.
Only on a hot day.
I want to get back to something serious.
Well, I wanted to bring something up because TNT Radio has been excoriated by The Australian, and Graham knows a bit about this, where TNT and Graham's company, the Australian Journalists Association, wanted to do something for the Kennedy Awards. I think we should touch on that, Graham. Is that all right?
Yes.
This very station that believes in decency, honesty and truth has been called a bunch of hyenas or something or other, and Graham's business has been called a fake union for trying to help people, charge them less and give them more. Now, that's a dreadful thing to do, Graham. I think you should cut that out. and TNT Radio should be doing what everyone else does and say nothing about all the bloody rubbish that's been foisted on the world in the last 2 years. Well, we happen to stand and believe in decency, honesty, doing the right thing and giving a voice to people who've been, what's the word, taken off the air. People like Dr. Peter McCulloch and, you know, really decent, Delores Carl, a whole host of people have been, is it deplatformed or something? And we actually stand for all of that, and yet The Australian chose to denounce us, I think would be the right word, Graham, and you've had to point it out to the other way.
Well, the problem is, of course, that we're setting up the Australian Journalist Union. We're not ready to quite launch it. We're still trying to sort out some of the professional indemnity issues.
Right.
It's underway. It's happening. It's just you just can't do it overnight. And we were actually approached by the Kennedy Awards, which on this I thought it was a fabulous thing. It's an alternative to the Walkleys. Any journalist could actually win it. You didn't have to be a member of the MEAA to actually
get a gold
win. I thought it was a fairly good cause, and we spoke about it together. And they asked us for $50,000, and I said, well, this is. We're going to be a bit contentious because no union likes competition, and setting up an alternate, journalist association which actually is going to work for journalists is probably going to be contentious. So we said to them, "Well, we'll give you double, so that you've got a bit of room to move, and we'll do it for 5 years, so that you can really put this thing on a solid basis." And our condition was that no one would be allowed to interfere in any way, shape, or form. And apparently that was our bit, but apparently some of the other sponsors didn't like the fact that we weren't the MEAA, which is the traditional labor-backed union. And so lo and behold, on last Sunday, I was advised a media release had been put out saying that the Kennedy Awards, totally not discussed, well, there's no idea at all, the Kennedy Awards were reviewing our sponsorship, and then the next sentence said there is no way, I haven't got the actual words in front of me, but in effect, there is no way the Kennedy Awards could allow anyone to interfere with their processes. And so the inference being, of course, that
we were going to. We didn't. We had no interest
because we were doing it. Anyway, no. I saw the article in The Australian. I mean, I've no criticism for the guy who wrote the article. I mean, I'm pretty hard to defame, but I get very picky when people accuse me of outright lies. So I wrote to the board and said, go to a board meeting tonight, 5 o'clock, and I wrote and said, blah, 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 give us our money back, acknowledge that we have not been interfering and apologise. Anyway, they've agreed to all that. And there's a joint statement out, so they're giving us our money back. They're putting in writing that we haven't been doing what they accuse us of doing, and we wish them all the best. But I have no idea what's going to happen. I don't want to disparage them at all.
No, that is just a reflection on everything that's happening in Australia and the lack of objectivity and decency in journalism and decency.
Why would anyone want to win a Walkley? They won a whole bunch of them for their reporting on the Pell case, which, I'm not a Catholic. I'm Calvinist atheist. I got lots of Scots Canadian blood. But anyone who read the transcripts, there was no evidence that Pell did that. It was a disgraceful prosecution by the police and the DPP. And if it weren't for the High Court, and I don't think we have a very good High Court right now, but they have been good on criminal stuff. They were really good on Pell and possibly even better on Patel, the doctor. Again, he should never have been convicted. People don't understand math. Half the people have to be below average in their surgery rates because that's what average is. If you say he's a below average surgeon, well, there's lots of below average surgeons. There has to be. And so
James, we got to go.
Prosecuting was a disgrace.
I hate to tell you, this is great. We've got to get you back very soon.
We better go for a couple of hours.
We get cut off. And this is a great topic for next time.
No, we'll get him back on.
Thank you for coming on. And pleasure. Thank you, Graham.
Thank you,
it's great to see you again. I've got to go to Canada, so I won't be here for a week.
He's off
so.
To Canada in the morning.
Yeah.
Are you off to Canada?
I've got to go and trace your footsteps.
Canada is about five orders of magnitude politically to the left. Yes. Don't say anything about Trump. Take this from me. Don't say anything about Trump.
I won't even mention your name.
Thank you, boys. All the best. See you, Graham. See you, James.